My name is Sophia Zhu, and I'm a junior economics and math double major at Dickinson College. I became involved with the vase project exhibition because I've always been interested in the Chinese ceramics traditions, and I happened to mention this to my summer research faculty advisor. She knew about the upcoming vase project and saw it as a good fit for me because it dealt with both economics of the global market and the ceramics capital of China, Jingdezhen. As part of my work on the show, I developed interpretive materials, including the interview you will hear on this app. For the interview, I spoke with Professor Ren Wei, Assistant Professor of Art and Art History, and the Tamar and Emil Weiss Chair in Asian Art. The first thing I asked her about was the subject matter of these vases, landscapes. I wonder why is it so much of Chinese painting features the natural world.
Now, in China, there is this belief that everything in the cosmos is made of qi, is kind of translated as vapor or energy. But it's not just energy or vapor in its static form. You know, all this qi exists in everything, right? They're in constant movement to generate all sorts of balance and harmony in the cosmos, right? And one of the visual representation of such, you know, a concept of qi is through landscape painting. And we know that in the Northern Song Dynasty, there emerged the painting genre referred to as a monumental landscape. Now, in this type of painting, you very much see depictions of nature, right? Mm-hmm. But just not static nature, but nature in movement, in constant change, harmonizing itself with the qi.
The landscapes on the vases in this exhibition are painted not on rice paper, like traditional Chinese painting, but on porcelain ceramics. In this way, the material form of these landscapes is important to the overall aesthetic of the show. I knew, based on my own experiments with ceramics, that making something like this is difficult. So I asked Professor Ren to talk a little bit about things like accident that happen in the temperamental production process. One of the things she talked about was glazing.
Again, you know, sometimes you will have a glaze that shrinks a little faster than the clay during the firing process. So you will have get this crackling effect, right? Which mm-hmm. is supposed to be a flaw.
Yes.
But yet sometimes the Chinese really, really appreciated this crackling effect of looking at something so smooth and so soft, but looking crackled, right? So that kind of this contradictory visual experience makes that crackling very appealing. And the Chinese actually referred to this type of crackling as cicada wing to evoke the sort of papery kind of fragile texture.
In addition to how these vases were made, I was interested in the specific material used to create the particular vibrant blue and luminous white that we see in this exhibit.
Blue and white, right? It's unbelievable that this color combination became such a dominant preference throughout the world.
Yes.
Starting from the 15th, 16th century, right? Mm. Now, you have to realize the important role that trade, international trade, played in this in the process of spreading the aesthetics of blue and white. Now we know that blue, the color, derives from the mineral cobalt, right? Mm. So it's usually cobalt blue. Again, in pre-modern times, that before mineral pigments were widely used, you have these a vegetable pigment, which can produce the color blue, but they're not very stable, right? Because it's vegetal and it can fade fairly quickly. So through trade, China was able to acquire the color blue, the pigment blue, from Persia, from modern Iran, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really through trade that China was able to expand its color selections, right? Mm-hmm. Now we know the blue isn't just a Chinese aesthetic, right? We know that in West Anatolia, in modern Turkey, in the city of Iznik, there's a famous Iznik blue tiles, right? Iznik
yes.
blue ceramics. So from very early on, the combination of blue and white became a very preferred aesthetic choice for ceramicists across the globe. And it's only natural that this aesthetic China began to produce its blue and white porcelain not only for the European market,
yes.
Starting from the 15th, 16th century, but also for the Islamic world.
Mm.
There's trade between the Islamic world and China, which further sort of strengthened this preference for the blue and white aesthetic.
While so much of the vase project deal with traditional aspects of Chinese art, Professor Ren was careful to point out that what makes this particular exhibition unique is the many ways in which traditional elements, both the style of individual vases and the subject matter depicted, have been reinterpreted by contemporary Chinese artists. Another aspect of the vases that emerged as an innovative reinterpretation has to do with the symbolism in art.
What's interesting about this particular vase project is that it's so diverse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody, although was given specific instructions as to what to do and how one should respond to
mm-hmm.
the previous vase that had been painted, the painters, the artists really took on a lot of freedom in how they want to decorate the vase they're given to. So, you know, I would say one of the things that really amazed me is the diversity of the painting.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have for example, on the cover of the vase project, you have a scene from the Jing Dezhen, the porcelain making kilns, the
mm-hmm.
workshops, right?
Yes.
And that's very much reminds me of the woodblock prints produced in the 17th century, illustrating the scenes from Jing Dezhen, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the sake of dissemination, the medium of woodblock print had a very important role in China and East Asia, and you know, more broadly worldwide as well. And sometimes, you know, there's one particular vase that strikes to me as more resembling to a landscape, a Dutch landscape from Delft, which Delft, the city of Delft, which is a really traditional port city that is known for its porcelain creation,
mm-hmm.
very much influenced by Jing Dezhen
mm-hmm.
through the trade.
Professor Ren pointed out that not only is symbolism quite nuanced in Chinese art, but also that it is so much a part of the Chinese artist's vocabulary that these artists use symbolic elements as one of the ways they craft individual expressions.
For example, crane is associated with longevity. Pine is, symbolizes longevity because it's evergreen.
Yes.
And you have bamboo referencing to an uprightness and a loftiness that is associated with the scholar elite in Chinese history. These symbolisms are so internalized and very much digested by the well-learned in Chinese society now and then. The combination sometimes is very interesting.
Yes.
You know, traditionally you don't paint a fishing village next to a small stack, right? So that
yes.
juxtaposition of urban and rural is very interesting.
While the exhibition as a whole can be seen as a work of art centered around issues of artistic tradition and the transmission of tradition in the contemporary world, it also raises interesting questions about how China is perceived in today's world and the role that the increasing economic power of China might play in the future.
In contemporary terms, that China has been booming its economy and
mm-hmm.
and production, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's the status of handmadeness, you
mm-hmm.
know? And again, you know, when we think of the term made in China, oftentimes things made of, you know, poor quality,
yes.
Cheaply made
mm-hmm.
Comes to mind. But that's a very recent phenomenon, right? In the past 30, 20 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, made in China, if you think back in history, basically signals an extreme luxury and well-made, well-crafted object, right? And then China is doing things to sort of trying to rip this image of
mm-hmm.
the world's factory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything being made cheaply and quickly and of poor quality. And again, I think this exhibition really takes that issue and treat it in such a way that it makes one think a lot about handmadeness and versus mass production. But it doesn't give definitive answers to that question.
Yes.
And leaves a lot of space
mm-hmm.
For the audience to think over. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's also one of the wonderful aspects of this exhibition.